you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
What you're about to hear is part two of Rex Morris by Kevin Valbenesi. If you're looking for media services, whether it's a commercial, podcast, or motion graphics, Kevin's your talent. Visit him at baroquemedia.ca. I'm very thankful to have him contributing to the Twilight Histories. Here it is, part two of Rex Morris by Kevin Valbenesi.
You wake up on a cold stone floor. Your head rests on a messy bundle of cloth. As you try to sit up, you feel the strain under which your flesh and bones labor. Touching your hand to the back of your head, you feel a large bump. Did you fall? Were you struck? Where exactly are you? Your mind races about, struggling to keep up with your eyes as they flicker back and forth, looking for information in the dark room. A familiar voice booms into the room, carried in from a long and well-lit corridor. You struggle to your feet and follow the gruff tones out of the darkness and into the stone corridor. You're nearly blinded by the light pouring through the arched windows, but you can see well enough that you're still very much in 1066 AD. You're barely halfway down the corridor before the shouting from ahead becomes intelligible.
How could you not know that a fleet that size was coming?
It's Harold. You slow your steps and hug the wall. As you reach the end of the corridor, you peer out from behind a corner and spot Harold, Mustafa, and Phocas standing around a large wooden table covered in maps and several sheets of parchment. Mustafa unfolds his arms and points a defiant finger down on one of the maps.
You know as well as I do that we don't control any ports north of Pescara. We had no word of any buildup, and I doubt our patrols survived the encounter with so massive a fleet.
Mustafa walks away from the table and looks out of a window.
That we managed a retreat is proof that God has not abandoned us yet.
God, no. But the Emperor. There's no way that Miklagard was unaware of the Doge's intentions. There would be consequences for one vassal of the Empire to attack another.
Harold turns to Phocas.
Unless Roman fear now outweighs Roman favor.
My king, why would the Emperor do such a thing? We've always turned over the Emperor's dues, and both Mustafa and I have lent aid whenever and wherever it was requested. If we truly lost favor, we all would have been warned, or worse, summoned to the capital to have our tongues cut out.
Perhaps we were warned. Mustafa returns to the table. The Doge's emissary spoke as if he had the authority of the capital.
What are you suggesting?
Phocas throws his arms up in the air and turns to Mustafa.
Constantinopolis cowers whenever any general becomes too popular or powerful out in the Anatolian themes. Then look at us, with a king ruling in Sicily, his ranks swelling with Varangians and Muslims loyal only to him, and success against the Caliphate that even the late Basil would never have dreamt of.
Mustafa folds his arms together, punctuating a case well put. Harold considers all of this, as do you. You watch the king as he casts his eyes down in concentration. He doesn't pace, he doesn't fidget, he just breathes and thinks. Mustafa spots you, and you panic for a moment, but a subtle gesture from Mustafa restores your senses. You press yourself against the wall and keep your eyes fixed straight ahead at the wall opposite you, no matter how much you want to peek around the corner again.
Then, we must look to our defenses. Mustafa, take the fleet and keep the Venetians contained to the Adriatic. Send word to Sicily and order every other available ship to mine the Aegean and Anatolian coasts.
With barely a breath, Harold continues.
Phocas, take what cavalry we can muster and rally the garrison troops. Order any and all infantry to the coastal fortresses, and then return here as soon as you can, with as many riders as you can. Now, go, both of you.
You hear footsteps and quickly retreat to the dark room. You listen as Harold thunders through the corridors, with Phocas following close behind. Mustafa enters your room and flashes a disarming smile.
You picked the good time to wake up. Welcome to Corfu.
Mustafa, what happened?
We'll have to walk and talk. Come.
Mustafa turns and starts walking before you even have a chance to respond. Before you know it, your feet carry you forward, though not without severe discomfort. Progress is slow as you and Mustafa move down the main street of this port city. Soldiers and citizens are all out, in each other's faces, and in some cases, getting violent. You watch as a woman throws herself at a group of Roman soldiers who are leading a young man, presumably her son, away toward the harbor. You see men in little more than their tunics get spears shoved into their arms and scant bits of armor dropped at their feet. Not one person looks keen on their induction into the army. Mustafa, what's going on?
Desperate times, my friend. We lost a few troop transports in the Venetian attack. And if we're going to survive the incoming assault, we need to replenish our ranks.
You turn your eyes to the sea, scanning the horizon for any signs of the enemy. But there's nothing there. Mustafa takes note of your confusion.
For some reason, they did not give chase. Most likely, they are collecting more men from the Italian mainland. That decision might have bought us precious few hours.
You reach the crowded harbor and stop just in front of Harold's capital ship. Looking around, you're greeted by the sight of several bodies piled up against the walls of the harbor. Most stripped bare of anything valuable, some still being picked clean by the surviving soldiers. Mustafa's attention is focused on the dozens of ships crowding the harbor, and those anchored further out along the coastline. It's all a big, bloody mess as Harold's mauled forces attempt to make order out of their chaotic circumstances. You're surprised as Mustafa places a firm hand on both of your shoulders.
Listen, my friend, I'm sorry for this, but you'll be on your own from here on out.
But Mustafa, why? I don't understand.
We will not win this war if we cede control of the greater seas to the Venetians. I am Harold's greatest admiral, so I have to be on the front lines.
So let me come with you. Won't it be safer?
No, you're safer here. Harold has fortresses and castles placed all around the island. As long as you hunker down there, you stand a better chance of surviving.
Several of the young men you saw in the town are forced onto the capital ship at spear point by a group of Roman soldiers. You watch as these frightened townsfolk are forced to go below deck, presumably to take control of the oars. Why bring me down here if you're just going to leave?
If you don't want to end up a galley slave or trampled by the huddling masses, you're going to need to join the army.
Well, that doesn't sound like staying out of harm's way.
They will not put you out on the front lines. If you move quickly, you can probably join the force garrisoning the castle. Harold will lead the Varangian Guard in the immediate defense of the area. I know it's hardly noble, but if you want to survive, you need to strip one of those corpses and join a group of soldiers as soon as you see one. And with that, Mustafa pulls you into a firm embrace. Good luck, my friend. And just as quickly, Mustafa shoves off and boards the capital ship. A horn blares out, and on cue, the ships are all unmoored. Their sails drop, and a familiar drumming brings the oars to life. You gaze at Mustafa, who has already forgotten about you, marching up and down the length of his ship, barking orders at the sailors. As the first few ships leave the harbor, you set your sights on your morbid commission. You approach the piles of the unfortunate fallen and clamber about in search of someone roughly your size. You struggle to keep the contents of your stomach from erupting out of your mouth. You can't help but look back over your shoulder at Mustafa's ship, and as it sails away, you wonder if it's taking your only means of survival with it. Your chest heaves with each labored breath as you struggle to keep up with the Roman soldiers ahead of you. Not one of them has looked back since you joined them on their march from the harbor and into the city. The armor you pulled from a dead soldier is a poor fit, but it's relatively clean and certainly doesn't weigh on you as much as the spear and shield you're carrying. The trip through town is brief, with the streets now clearing out. Up ahead of you, the citizens of this small town, the name of which you hear is Cassiope, march toward the castle. Varangians stand on either side of the human column, crawling its way up to safety. Order, it seems, comes at the end of a spear, rather than the polite request of the king. Your unit is helping to bring up the rear, pushing the women, children, and elders of Cassiope ever onward. As the last few citizens pass under the castle gate, you summon what strength you can to sprint inside, but a sudden turn of the other Roman soldiers leaves you exposed. You linger longer than you should, then reluctantly go after the soldiers. But you don't get far. A big, meaty hand grabs you by the arm, nearly pulling you off your feet. You spin around and gasp as you find yourself face to face with Harold. He looms over you, eyebrows furrowed.
Still alive, I see.
Harold pulls you in so close that his beard brushes against your face. His hair is rough and salt-crusted.
You're either very lucky or very clever.
I don't understand.
You're from the capital, and that's what Mustafa says. Then, surely, you must have heard something about all of this. Doge of Venice would not attack without at least the blessing of the Emperor. And I know for a fact that lips are loose in Miklagard.
I didn't hear anything, I swear. Harold lowers his axe toward your shoulder, just touching the edge of the blade to it.
I don't have time for this. Tell me everything you know, or I'll lop off your head and hurl it into the sea.
I don't know anything. I swear on my life. If I'd known about the Venetians attacking, I'd never have set foot on your ship. That would all but guarantee that I'd be killed. Harold considers your answer for a moment. He scoffs and shoves you back. You reach for your neck instinctively, massaging it, glad that it wasn't crushed.
If you swear on your life, then you've pledged it to me. Come.
You don't dare wait an instant, so you immediately follow Harold. Again, you can't help but glance back as your easy escape gets further and further away.
A group of particularly vicious-looking Varangians form up around you and Harold as you stop at some distance from the castle. The rest of the army is in front of you. Romans, Arabs, and more Varangians. The entire force numbers maybe 800 men. A handful of Roman and Arab commanders approach Harold and confer with him and his corps of the Varangian Guard.
"We'll keep things simple,"
Harold begins.
"Our aim here is to cripple the enemy's land forces. As it stands, I am confident that the seas are still ours, but we will be denied vengeance in Venice should we try to land in the face of Robert's warriors. Instead, we'll let them come to us, fight on our soil."
The men all nod to Harold, accepting the order without question.
"We'll let them take the port and march on us. With our backs to the castle, we can more easily stand against them."
Harold extends a meaty arm and points at the battlements of the castle.
"Archers cover us and thin out the enemy ranks on their approach."
Harold points down at the walls.
"Light infantry form up against the walls and be prepared to push. My Varangians and I will hold the front with our shield wall. We do not give ground. If anyone on our side tries to run, put a spear through their back. Now, go. Ready your men."
The soldiers bow out and return to their men. You take a deep breath and try to center yourself, but you're denied even that solace as Harold shoves you aside to meet an incoming Roman rider. The Roman rider points to the sea, and as your eyes turn to the horizon, you understand the situation without needing to hear a thing. Venetian ships are already closing in on the port. And even at this distance, you can see that they're swarming with men. Harold confers with the rider once more, and then sends him speeding off to the west. Two Varangians rush over, carrying a deep red cloak, which they fasten to Harold's back. Harold now looks like a hero, pulled straight from the sagas. And by the way he twirls his axe, you don't doubt for a moment that he's looking forward to the approaching battle. You heave your shield up and grasp your spear. The time for battle is almost upon you. You peer out from behind Harold and the Varangians to survey the field. As expected, the Norman cavalry arrive first, occupying the center of the enemy lines. Each warrior sits atop a massive destrier and carries a long spear. The Normans are all giants, a sign of their shared heritage with the Varangian enemies they are now preparing to slaughter. The infantry on the enemy side is almost entirely Lombard. Lightly armored men carry spears and short swords along with their circular shields. Their tunics are almost all red, mocking the Roman colors they've since supplanted in Italy. A few mercenaries from small companies form up around the Lombard ranks, mostly men of the Dalmatian coast, many sweltering in their long and layered tunics. In the distance, you can see the Venetian fleet anchored in and near the harbor. Little men dart about, hauling supplies and taking control of Cassiope. You find it telling that while the Normans immediately disembarked and rowed out to meet their enemy, the Venetians set about plundering and loading their ships. Looking back at your side, it's hard to mistake the defensive posture Harold's taking in this fight. Roman and Arab infantrymen form up behind you, all the way to the walls of the castle, with archers above, though not quite as numerous as you wish they were. Ahead of you, and to either side, the Varangians stand in ravenous anticipation, axes and spears ready, large round shields covering the wielder and his neighbor to the left, like the phalanxes of old. Harald stands right in front of you, looking like Odin himself in his splendid armor, with his axe slung over his shoulder. Here, at least, is a king who will stand with his men. A single rider from the Norman side approaches Harald's lines. This is no mere messenger, however. This man wears a beautiful multicolored tunic and has a small crown built into his helmet. This man's long white hair and beard catch the wind as he finally comes to a halt within spitting distance of the Varangian spears. If you were to hazard a guess, you'd say this man is Robert Guiscard. You can't help but smile. If it is him, here is a man you've known intimately, even if you never could have met him before. Even now, as his army threatens to take your life, you can't help but be in awe of this great medieval mover of the world. What you'd give in any other circumstance to stand by and observe him as you have with Harald. You'll have to settle for seeing if the Norman martial prowess is as legendary as the chronicles say it is. So, the sea wolf finally comes to fight on land. Robert's lips curl into a ravenous grin. For an older man, he carries himself with all the vigor of a young fox. He trots his horse back and forth, inspecting Harald's lines. You're stuck in the past, my friend. The rider is king, but here, you meet me in the manner of savages.
We are savages.
Harald twirls his axe in his hands. He stands in stoic defiance, awaiting the next taunt.
Our merchant friends tell me that I'm supposed to offer you a chance at surrender. But I suppose I can just tell them that there is no bargaining with savages. And at any rate, I believe you and I are very curious to see whose might is right.
Then ride. We'll see each other again shortly.
Robert shakes his head, still grinning like a fiend. He rears up his destrier and speeds off, signaling to his men that it will, in fact, be war. Both sides sound their horns. Final preparations are made. You spy several soldiers on your side, concluding their prayers, some touching their heads to the ground, aiming east, while others fold their hands and look skyward, and still more clutch their weapons to their chests, and with faint whispers seek the aid of more than one god. You're going to have to place your hope in the arms of fortune. The enemy moves first, looking to claim the initiative. The Norman cavalry advance at a slow trot, sizing up Harald's lines, looking for the point of impact. You wonder at how your lines, only 3 or 4 men deep in some spots, can withstand the hundreds of hulking equines and their fierce riders.
Whatever happens, hold the line.
Harald's words boom out and across the ranks. His Varangians take the message to heart, planting their feet firmly on the ground, the front row practically digging themselves into the earth, while the rows behind press up against the front, lending their strength and stability. You press up against Harald's back, more for your own safety than for any hope of helping him hold ground. Harald picks up his own massive shield and wields his axe with his right arm, though any other man would need both to carry the thing. He bangs his axe against his shield, whipping up a furor from the ranks of his men. The Normans draw closer, their horses breaking from a trot into a full gallop. The enemy formation looks like the tip of a spear, and it's aimed right at the heart of Harald's lines. Right at you.
Arrow fire. Now!
Harald screams back at the Arabs and Romans, who now knock arrows to their bows. They draw and aim, angling their bows in anticipation of the Norman advance. Confident, the archers loose their deadly volley. You watch as hundreds of arrows blast into the sky, arcing upward like a cobra preparing to strike. The arrows then come crashing down to the earth, peppering the east wing of the Norman cavalry. Only a handful of riders and horses tumble to the earth, while the rest continue, unfazed. The archers repeat this routine again and again, though they find it hard to mow down the Normans. And soon, it's too late. The Normans are within 50 feet of you. Their war cry rings out over your head. Everyone at the front tightens up. Harold shouts, "Shield wall!" On cue, the Varangians close ranks with their shields, tightening up to better absorb the impact. You and several others in the back rows bring your shields up and over to protect the heads of your comrades. But now, you can't see the Normans, and the anticipation of impact is left up entirely to the thunder of hundreds of hooves. There's a deafening crash as the Normans finally slam into the shield wall. You're launched back and onto the ground as Harold is jolted from behind the shield by the impact of a massive destrier and its rider. You look up and see a Norman rider flying over the shield wall, thrown from his mount. He crashes down behind you, and before he can recover, he is set upon by several Roman soldiers who drive their swords into his back. You leap to your feet and rush over to Harold, who is trying to fend off two mounted Normans with his shield and axe. You lift your spear over your head and hurl it, hoping it doesn't land in the king's back. One of the Normans crumples off of his horse as your spear lodges itself in his gut. You grab a broken spear from nearby and then press up against Harold, heaving your shield up over his shoulder just in time to deflect the blow from the other Norman's spear. Harold swings his axe in a wide arc, burying it deep in the side of his Norman foe. The rider falls to the ground, and his mount is driven off its spear point. You can just about glimpse the Normans retreating from the immediate engagement before Harold raises his shield again, obscuring your vision. You listen as the sound of hooves grows fainter and fainter until finally it stops. There's silence, if only for an instant, before the hooves return, now accompanied by the rhythmic beat of feet and armor clanging with each step. You hear the horses break into a full gallop, no time for trotting. This time, they mean to smash Harold's lines to bits. The enemy infantry cry out, bolstering the confidence of the riders.
"Arrow fire, now!"
Harold's voice booms out, and the archers are quick to oblige him. You don't know if any of the arrows will find their mark. All you know is that the Normans are getting closer, and closer, and closer, until the crash is deafening. You and Harold are both knocked hard on your back. Several spots along the Varangian lines collapse under the sheer weight of the Norman impact. As you and Harold spring to your feet to meet the enemy, you catch a glimpse of the quickly advancing infantry. Your eyes then dart about, overwhelmed by the sheer catastrophe of the scene before you. The Varangians rally, trying to reform their shield wall and push back against the Normans, while Romans and Arabs rush to hurl spears and shoot arrows in the faces of the riders. It's a bloody mess, with men and horses writhing on the ground, saturating the battlefield with blood, sweat, and filth.
"On me?"
Harold screams at the top of his lungs. He casts his shield aside and grasps his axe. His breathing is heavy, and his body glistens in the midday sun, drenched in a feverish sweat. He twirls his axe and rushes forward, hungry for blood. He swings his axe like a berserker, cleaving men and horses to bits with every violent arc of his weapon. Your heart is seized by something it hasn't felt before. Your fear melts away, and you find yourself compelled to move forward. The sight of this one man holding back dozens leaves you no choice but to follow his example. You toss aside your broken spear and take a new one from the fallen Norman. Without a second thought, you rush into the melee, nearly losing your head as Harold swings his axe horizontally to cleave an enemy across the chest. You're surprised by the strength you muster now in this most desperate moment. Your shield and spear move effortlessly, as if they were mere extensions of your limbs. You don't flinch, but block and parry as enemy spears menace you. Still, for all your fighting and Harold's, with the infantry closing in, you realize that the enemy is pushing you back. Even under constant arrow fire, the infantry advances, threatening your left and right wings with collapse.
Fight! Earn your place in Valhalla!
You and the other soldiers give a desperate last push, finally penetrating past the cavalry and into direct confrontation with the more numerous and organized Lombard infantry. You and the others scramble to reform some manner of shield wall as the Lombards hack at you with their short swords. Your strength begins to fail you. You give ground under the weight of the Lombard assault. Your spear is knocked out of your hand, leaving you with only your shield to fend off the relentless assault. Only Harold refuses to give ground. And soon, it seems like he's the only thing holding back total defeat. Somehow, he continues to rave, swinging his axe around without a hint of exhaustion. Here indeed is a man that even the sagas could do no justice. Horns sound again, this time from the enemy's side. The fighting stops, and the Norman Lombard forces scramble to make sense of the signal. Harold finally yields, planting his axe in the ground. He catches his breath and then starts laughing like a madman. Your courage vanishes, replaced with the realization that your last rush was nothing more than group folly, inspired by this graying, raving Viking. But Harold is vindicated right away. His laughter falls away, drowned out by the sound of hooves. But it's not the Normans. All the Norman riders are right in front of you, trying to control their thrashing destriers. You stand tall and raise a hand over your brow to shield your eyes from the blinding sun. And then you see it. Like the long shaft of a spear, the Roman cavalry, Phocas at its head, bears down on the Norman Lombard forces. Hundreds of riders approach, led by men and horses completely covered in armor. The legendary cataphracts. A hail of arrows arrives ahead of the Roman cavalry, easily finding their mark. The Romans and Arabs on your wings raise their bows and spears again, their spirits lifting. And once more, they thrust themselves into the fight. Panic sets in among the Norman Lombard ranks. Norman riders attempt to plow through the infantry, looking for a narrow escape. Lombards trip over each other as they try to turn and face the oncoming cataphracts. A desperate shield wall goes up, but it's not enough. Cataphracts plow into the enemy lines, sweeping them aside like a tsunami. Two-thirds of the enemy are trampled, smashed, or run through in a matter of minutes. Harold heaves his axe back up, and drawing once again from that unknown well of energy, he leads the charge forward, trapping the enemy in a deadly vice. You take a knee, planting your spear to at least stay upright. You watch as the last of the enemy are crushed between the cataphracts and the Varangians. You notice one splendid rider in particular meet his end as Harold hurls his axe at and into his helmet, easily piercing the iron, sending this man, like all his comrades, down into the muck. Harold spreads his arms out, baring his chest as he lets loose a beastly howl. He retrieves his axe from the fallen corpse of Robert Guiscard and resumes his rampage, making it very clear to everyone that the Sea Wolf will not be kept from the waves any longer.
That was part two of Rex Morris by Kevin Valbenesi. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more shows by Kevin on the Twilight Histories, please sign up to become a member. The latest member show is easily the weirdest thing I've ever done. I wanted to push the boundaries with this one and show you just how bizarre alternate universes can be. This one diverges from our own universe eons ago. You remember the episode we did called The Blood Ape, where you visited a world 200,000 years ago in Africa? That's nothing. This one takes place millions and millions of years ago. But don't be fooled into thinking you're going to some low-tech world. Apparently, someone, or something, has terraformed Venus. Your mission is to guide a bioengineer to this world and help her figure out how they did it. This member series is a layer cake, so each show will reveal more. We're just at the start. Here's a 2-minute sample from the early stages of your exploration.
Your list just yet.
What do you mean? You say, pulling off a large clump of vines to reveal more of the huge blocks of stone masonry beneath, all finely carved and fitted.
The plants, remember?
Yeah, what about them?
They're not from our time.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. All these worlds are different, but this is definitely built by human hands.
I don't think you get what I'm saying. These plant species we're seeing, they're not slightly different. They're about 50 million years different.
50 million?
Well, how do you explain this stone monument?
She doesn't answer, but walks around as though searching for something.
Over here, she says.
What is it?
Cut away those vines.
Yes, my lady.
You start to saw at the vines with the serrated part of your knife.
No, no, just pull them. You take that end, and I'll take these. You pull the vines apart as though drawing curtains. Behind them is a stone stairwell leading into the darkness.
How did you find that?
I felt a draft.
She opens your pack and pulls out a flashlight. She hands it to you.
Go ahead, she says.
Yes, my lady.
Stop calling me that.
Yes, my... She cuffs you on the back of the head.
Okay, so it's a little immature for a centenarian, but you have to have a little fun sometimes. You grin at April, turn the flashlight, and walk down the stairs.
If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, go on over to the website at twilighthistories.com and click on the page called Members. We're building the Twilight Histories by building the members area. So far, we've hired 2 podcasters, and I'm in talks with a third. This new guy is a great storyteller and someone I've had on the radar for years. I've asked him to do a trial show for us in June, but that might be a bit ambitious as we're not quite where we need to be. Every new member counts in hitting our June target, so please head on over to the website at twilighthistories.com and let's get growing. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.